I'm Anita Annabelle, and this is The Good Chat.
No, I'm not like compliments.
I'm quietly, I'm loving it.
I love making friends. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm a psychic. This podcast is going to be a hit.
Little chit chat.
This is probably the best chat. No, that's why this is called The Good Chat. We get good chat, mate.
Hello and welcome to this episode of The Good Chat. I am your host, Anita Annabelle. On today's episode, I had the utmost joy of chatting to Zoe Tarakis, who is starring in both Nine Perfect Strangers on Amazon Prime alongside Nicole Kidman and on Foxtel's Wentworth. At only 21 years old, Zoe has landed roles on some of the biggest TV shows in both Australia and overseas and has only just begun. We spoke about being on set with some of the world's biggest stars, how auditioning with self-tapes has ended up with the police being called, and how living their truth as a transgender male put them on the path to success. It was so warm and so much fun, and I know you are going to be just as obsessed with them as I am. Now, just a quick note, due to the ongoing lockdown in Sydney, I was unable to get into the studio to record, so I apologise if the audio is not at the usual standard. Here is Zoe Tarakis. Thanks so much for chatting to me. I am so thrilled to be meeting you, honestly.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you for having me.
So you are one busy person at the moment. Congratulations on both Nine Perfect Strangers and the final season of Wentworth. How are you doing all of this? It's crazy.
It's smoke and mirrors, babes. I have not worked all year. Everything's coming out, so I look really busy. I'm so bored in lockdown. But I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky that all these shows are coming out. It's exciting.
That's terrible. Are you not doing any work or anything during lockdown?
No, but I look so busy, which I'm very grateful for. Heaps a really good actor, but no, I'm very unemployed.
Your social media must be like going off and you're sitting in there like lying in bed in your sweats just going... eating ice cream.
Let the people think what they want, you know what I mean?
Well, it is honestly so wonderful to watch how far you're going. Let's talk about Nine Perfect Strangers because that's why we're here to chat. What a series to land in. Oh my goodness. How did this project land in your lap?
Listen, it's a funny story. I finished shooting Wentworth the day I was meant to film the audition for Nine Perfect Strangers. And I was so upset to be finishing Wentworth. I've been crying all day because, you know, it was a special job. And I got the audition and the audition was like, you know, yoga instructor. Like she's an online person, you know. And I was like, in no way in fresh hell do I look like a yoga instructor. Like, come on. Like, you know, I just thought it was going to be all Isabel Cornishes of the world, you know, which I am not. And Isabel is so good at. Anyway, and then I kind of like reluctantly did the audition because I just was so certain I wasn't going to get it because it was such a long shot. And like my eyes are like these little slits in my face because I've been crying so much. Anyway, did the audition, sent it to my agent saying, I don't even know if it's good enough to send, but like send it on anyway. And then I got a call like a week later being like, they really liked it. And I was like, I beg your pardon. What?
How do I recreate this emotion? How do I recreate this emotion that I just had from finishing a series?
And I was so stoked, obviously, you know, just like shocked. And then it all kind of went from there. And within quite a short space of time, I was in Byron.
That is such a hectic story.
Yeah, it was so hectic. It was so hectic. I couldn't quite believe it.
Don't you reckon like when you do auditions and things, you know, I'm an old drama kid, so you know, obviously I know what I'm talking about. But don't you think when you go to auditions you're like, oh, I botched that. I was so shit. And then like you walk out and then they're like, that was the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
You just can never tell when it's yourself. You can never tell.
No.
The ones I think I butcher are the ones I get, and the ones where I'm like, see you in Hollywood, don't get them. You know what I mean?
see you in Hollywood. I'm going to nail this. I've nailed it. Actually, the best piece of advice that I was ever given by a friend of mine, he is an actor, or trying to be an actor. Oh, that's very mean. Better cut that out. And he actually said to me, Anita, the audition, treat that as the job.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah. I think, is the key. In your case, maybe don't treat any audition as a job and botch them all this again. Anyway, so you were one of the youngest on set, surrounded by some of the biggest icons in Hollywood, which is some of the biggest names, which is wild.
Yeah.
What did you learn from these veterans of Hollywood?
Oh man, like so much. I mean, once I got past the like complete and utter fear of talking to any of them, like I remember when I first, because my first day on set was a day with everybody. So I just walked into like, you know, some of my favorite actors in the world. Like I remember when I saw Bobby, I just, for like a good couple of months, I couldn't string a sentence together around him. Like he was the last one. Every time I talked to him, I'd be like, oh, I said, hey man, yes, what's happening? And that was about it. But I learned, I think, because I'm, you know, I don't do a whole lot in the series, but I'm always there. And so I got to watch them constantly, which was like, it was like being in a masterclass, like for 5 months, just watching these people who are such pros at what they do. And they work so differently to how I've seen Australians work, I think. Like they just kind of take up their space, they know what they're there to do, and they fucking deliver, and it's extraordinary.
That's very interesting when you say compared to Australians, and I guess because you've come from some big Australian casts, what is that primary difference? Is it that they just walk on, they deliver, walk off, they just know what they're doing?
I don't think it's about knowing what they're doing. Like some of my favorite actors in the world are Australian actors. I think it's more, I don't know. I think there's something culturally in Americans that's just like a confidence or a like, I know what I'm here to do. And I think in Australia, we kind of apologize for everything we do before we do it. I also think, you know, there's less work in Australia. So, you know, on Aussie jobs, like everyone's just kind of wanting to be really fucking nice and careful around everyone because we're so worried about working again. Like at that league, you don't ever have to think about working again because you just know you're going to. So they kind of, they show up, they do what they need to do to deliver the best performance possible. And they are always kind and always respectful. But if they need to go into a zone, they go into a zone. And it's so extraordinary to watch somebody just like prioritize their craft, you know?
Yeah. I feel it's like you're going to be in that league soon.
Oh man, I don't know about that. Like that's a little while off.
The reason I say soon is because we're in lockdown. Are you in Sydney?
I am in Sydney.
Me too. So like we're in lockdown, 11 weeks of lockdown. So like where else are you going to go but up when once we get out of here?
Literally anything's better than this, babe.
You will literally deliver on every occasion. You'll be like, I'm here. I'm ready. Do not underestimate me. I'm here. Filming in Byron. Let's talk about filming in the backyard of one of the most beautiful places in Australia. I mean, how stunning is that set as well? Were you working and living for 5 months in that one place?
Yeah, yeah. We worked between a couple of locations, but like mainly just three, one in Federal and one in town. And I was living on Belongil Beach, which is like,
how
you know,
gorgeous.
Some
yeah.
of the greatest surf in Byron. So I used to surf there every day. And it was so ridiculous. Like, it was just bullshit good. You know what I mean? Like, I think you just wake up every morning, you're like, what is my life? Like, this strange thing where, you know, I think a couple of us grapple with a bit of guilt, you know, the Americans coming from America where the country was literally on fire. Trump was still president. COVID was worse than it had ever been. You know, and then suddenly there's somewhere free and COVID-less and, you know, open and beautiful and natural. And I certainly felt it as well. Like, you know, a lot of my buddies are theater actors or theater makers, and a year that just literally burnt their industry, our industry, to the ground. And I was like, good Lord, I am lucky to be here. And I think that's what all of us really felt, was just like, immense gratitude.
I think one thing that I am loving about you is how humble you are and how grateful you truly do seem to have had the jobs that you have been fortunate enough and talented enough, might I add, to get.
That's very kind. Thank you.
It's true. And I'm really curious about something. There's been some criticism that because Leanne Moriarty wrote the book about Australia, that it should have been set in Australia. What do you think about that?
I don't really have an opinion about it. I feel like it works in America, and I feel like it makes sense that all the people going are American. And I think it makes sense that there are Aussies who work there, you know, because there can't always do seem to be those weird Aussie wellness people in those big international places, you know. Like, I think it adds up. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it works set in California. And I think you attract a certain type of person if you set it in California. So story-wise, I think it makes more sense.
Maybe. Yeah. How good have you – obviously, you've read the book. I'm either throwing you under a very big bus if you
– Read the book. Did not read the book.
Well, yeah. That was a fail.
Once I found out my character wasn't in it and we'd started shooting, I was reading the scripts, you know what I mean? I was like, I'll get around to it. Haven't yet.
Babe, you're in 11 weeks of lockdown. I'm pretty sure you should maybe get to that. I think it's time to read the book. But yes, your character is not in it.
My mom fucking loves the book. I don't know why I haven't done it. I have no reason. I have a copy of it in my room.
Well, is it
signed?
And it just
stares back at me. No! It just haunts me for moments like this when I get asked in interviews, have you read the book? And I say no. You know, because I could lie. I could always lie. But then I don't know the differences between the show and the book, you know?
Yeah. Look.
And I'll get sprung. And I don't want to get sprung.
Okay. I'm going to make you feel better. I've read like 9 chapters.
See? You didn't even read the book.
No, but I tried.
Oh, you tried.
No, I really loved it. It's just that I have it on Audible and mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Mm-hmm. I edit a lot of podcasts mm-hmm. and, you know, this isn't mm-hmm. about me.
That's why you didn't read it.
This is really not about me. Anyway. Okay, let's talk about the dichotomy between Glory on 9 Perfect Strangers and Reb on Wentworth. We can't go without talking about Reb on Wentworth. Look, how do you approach such different roles?
That's a big question. It's, I don't know. There's a strange thing about characters and, you know, Glory is not much of a character, but she is a person and I definitely mm-hmm. sat in my body in a certain way when I was being her and I sat in my body very differently when I was being Reb. And I think that's something I always, that instinctively happens is like, you sit in your body differently depending on the person you're being. I think we do it in life as well. You know, we sit in our body differently. Like I'm sitting in my body differently now to how I would with my parents, you know, my friends.
That's hurtful, but that's okay.
I'm sorry.
Thought we were friends. That's all right.
Not bitter about it.
At least I read 9 chapters. Okay.
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know. I think Reb was such a, a lot meatier character, but so had carried so much trauma in his body, and then to go so quickly to the other end of the spectrum is this person who's just meant to be like an open book, you know, and she's fucking not, like she's up to some shady shit, obviously they all are, but yeah, I think the whole Tranquillum vibe and the vibe of everyone who works there is they're meant to be just, you know, pure and untainted and open and, you know, energetically beautiful, which is ironic, you know, because nobody is pure and fully open and fully energetically pure. But that's the vibe you're meant to give off, you know.
Yeah. I'm just thinking back to that insanely, insanely cool scene in just the last episode, which was on at the time of recording, where you're screaming in the cave.
Oh, yeah.
How on earth do you dig deep and scream like that? I always, whenever I see screaming on screen, this is such a weird thing, but I'm going to say it anyway. I always am like, how do they, Where do they bring that from?
That was actually the audition scene, the screaming scene. And I was filming it at my friend's apartment, and she has really thin walls. And I've done tapes there before where people, you know, she's had to scream and like people call the cops and stuff. And so she was like, you get one take, like you cannot fuck this up. You get one scream. Otherwise my neighbors will call the police. And I was like, okay, okay. Anyway, I fucked it up. We had to do it more times. I was like, I'm sorry. But yeah, that was a fun scene. It was actually, you know how it's meant to look really hot?
Yeah, it was freezing. It was
freezing cold. And we were all like just soaking in cold water. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you draw a scream like that from. Mine was probably from anxiety, fear. I don't know. Just fear of having to do the scream, you know?
Interesting. It's like an adrenaline rush or something.
Yeah, you feel like pretty spun afterwards. Like, I mean, besides having no voice by the end of the day, like, because you have to do it over and over and over again, you feel a bit like head spinny.
Yeah, because that whole scene was so powerful. And I think, like, what I'd love to know for the last couple of episodes, because at the time of recording, I think we've got, is it three left or two? Without giving anything away, what can we expect from the last bit of the series?
Madness. It just goes up and up and up. And I think the stakes get higher every episode, and it gets a lot more anxiety inducing and trippy and dark.
I'm so down. I'm so keen for it. I'm loving it so far, honestly.
Not good.
Now let's talk about you. You only really hit the spotlight 4 years ago, which is insane to me since you have already achieved so much. I'm like 15 years older than you, and I literally am like reevaluating my life choices. Where did this love of acting come from for you?
I think I've always had loved it, like forever, since I was a kid. But I think I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I felt a little bit embarrassed for a long time, like embarrassed about liking it or wanting to do it, because I felt embarrassed that because I looked a certain way or I was a certain way, like people who look like me and act like me don't get to be actors. So it's like, you know, it's a pipe dream. And so I always used to tell people that I wanted to be a director or a visual artist, like, and I was really into art, because I thought it was less embarrassing. And people would believe that I was a person who could be a director or an artist, not an actor. And so when it kind of started happening, I was like, what the fuck? I was as shocked as everybody else. I was like, oh my God. But it kind of just crept up on me. And like, I was very lucky to be put in a position where I had access to an agent, and then I had access to an audition, and then I got that audition, and then I suddenly had access to some like fucking extraordinary, you know, some of the greatest actors in Australia who put me in touch with a theatre director who I auditioned for, and then I did my first play, and it all kind of just went like every job knocked on to the next one. You know, so it's luck, and it is, you know, right place, right time. And I happen to be in a lot of the right places at the right time, you know. So I feel very fortunate that I was.
It also is talent, and you wouldn't have this knock-on effect if you weren't talented.
Oh, listen, I've worked really hard now, and I feel, you know, like sure of myself as an actor now. But, like, that first one, let me tell you, that was luck. Like, I got on set, and they were like, okay, so Zoe, like, you just walk up and hit your mark here. And I was like, what is hitting a mark? And then they were like, okay, so Zoe, just on the next take, just buddy, don't look down the barrel of the camera. I was like, got it. Sorry. Don't look down the barrel of the camera. Like, I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. And everyone was so gentle and kind with me, a lot kinder than I would be able to be with me. Yeah. Like that first one, pure luck. Everything after that, I'm like, no, credit where credit's due. I worked hard. But yeah, that one was just like,
it was a miracle you survived. It was a miracle. Yeah. It's a miracle they let you back on the next day, let's be honest.
100%.
So I'm really interested in the fact that you said people who look like me don't make it as actors. And that is that makes me really sad that you used to feel that way. But only 2 years ago, at the age of 19, you made a huge decision to come out as non-binary trans masculine. What was the moment that led to you living your truth?
I think, well, I'd come out, I'd done the whole rodeo once before coming out as gay, you know, but that was when I was like 17. And I also, you know, nobody really knew who I was, so it wasn't such a big deal. It was like, to my agent, you know what I mean? And like two people who watched Janet King who followed me on Instagram, you know?
And your mum. Yeah.
And my mum, yeah. With coming out as trans, I definitely, you know, I'd done a couple more jobs and particularly in theatre, like I felt like I'd made a bit of a name for myself in theatre. And I was really, really scared that I wouldn't work, because, you know, particularly at that time in 2019, like this is before the Wentworth audition had come through. I was like, I can't, besides like Morgan Davies in the end, who's extraordinary and a real game changer for the Australian industry in terms of trans representation, besides him, like I can't really, there was no trans roles. It was just none. And so I was like, if I do this, what if that's my acting career shot to shit, you know? But I remembered feeling that fear with coming out as gay and going, well, I actually worked a lot more after coming out as gay. Or maybe the same amount, but, you know, I played a lot of gay roles and I was like, I have to believe that nothing changes if you don't nudge it along, you know. And so I did it and it was really scary and I was terrified. And then like this kind of divine timing, you know, when things just go like the Wentworth edition came along and I was like, oh, this happens to be a trans role and I happen to have just come out as trans. How convenient. Yeah. And so, and I really fucking wanted it. And I worked really hard and I fought really hard and I, you know, kind of, I knew a lot of the people they were seeing for that role were girls and I felt really strongly that they shouldn't be. And you know, the producers and the casting people really heard that and took a risk. And I know that casting me was a risk because I had the least work on my back and, you know, I was the youngest. And I'm very grateful that they did, because I think, you know, it was a similar time as Morgan in the end and Georgie Stone on Neighbours. And I kind of feel like the three of us almost just timing wise set this new precedent, but this is how it is now. And anything else is unacceptable now, you know?
Yeah. Wow. That's quite a story. One thing it's really interesting is that you're actually living your truth. So when you start living your truth, honestly, the universe, it sounds really witchy woo, but the universe conspires to help you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's what it felt like. That's what it felt like, is when you start going, okay, I'm just going to step into this, however scary it is, the universe goes, okay, we hear you living your truth and therefore we're going to reward you, you know, or you're just stepping onto your path. You know what I mean? It's not even rewards.
Absolutely.
It's just like, oh, I'm exactly where I'm meant to be.
And path, when you're on your actual path, there's no resistance. And that's I think what people forget. Like when you, and one thing that you said really stuck out to me, you were like, you felt the fear and you did it. You know, it was like feeling the fear and doing it anyway. And I think that's something that really people just need to do, because when you feel that fear and you know that you need to take the jump, you do the jump and then amazing things start to happen. So I actually applaud you. And for you to push for representation is such an incredible thing, particularly at such a young age, for you to stand up for the minority and say, actually, we're not a minority. There are so many people exactly like me who deserve to be in this industry, and that is something to be completely applauded.
Thank you very much.
You did post on Instagram about Cameron McIntosh, who was slammed for saying that giving transgender people roles in classic roles like Mary Poppins is gimmick casting, and you shared this really educational post which actually educated me so much, and it's called Trans Erasure. Can you explain why that's so important for us to have knowledge about?
Totally. I just think it's his whole ideology, which was saying that, you know, a trans woman, it was Mary Poppins, wasn't it, should not be able to play Mary Poppins. It's harmful for a lot of reasons. The main reason that makes me angry is because it is that age-old thing of saying, yeah, but that's not a real woman. She's not a real woman, you know. She shouldn't be able to do it. And it's like, when, how fucking long is it going to take for people to understand that trans women are women and trans men are men? You know, like, I feel like saying most of the time when I refer to women, I want to say women and cis women. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like that's how it should feel. Like that, you know, like it just, that's why it really fucked me off. And I also think it pissed me off because trans people are ancient. You know, we've been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years in so many different cultures. And theater is also ancient and has been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years in so many different cultures. So how dare some fucking white guy say trans people don't belong in this ancient tradition? You know what I mean? Because they have forever, forever and ever, you know? And it's just very Western.
Yeah, very Western. And in Shakespeare, of course, you know, they used to have men dressed as women all the time.
Precisely.
People who don't understand, for us it's just to learn and to become knowledgeable and to have, be educated. I think the thing to become an ally, I guess, is the whole cool thing to say these days, is but it's just really about being educated and being willing to be educated. And I think Absolutely. That, you know, I think Cameron McIntosh didn't have very good sleep that night, let's be honest.
No, I shouldn't have been up.
Now, before I let you go, because our time is running out and I'm devastated because I'm obsessed with you, we could just chat forever. Yeah. I actually wanted to finish on a bit of a lighter note, and in honour of Nine Perfect Strangers, I have 9 rapid-fire questions about the show.
Okay. Okay.
This is an audition.
Okay, I'm ready.
You have to nail it. No, I'm joking. Okay, you ready? Yeah. Number one, who was the most professional on set?
Yeah, Nicole Kidman.
Obviously. Well, not obviously, yeah. But hello, Nicole Kidman. Yeah. She's a unicorn. Number two, who was the funniest on set?
Regina Hall. Regina Hall is the funniest woman I've ever met in my entire life, and nothing will convince me otherwise.
I want to meet Regina Hall. Yeah. Number three, mm-hmm. Who taught you the most?
Ooh, Bobby Cannavale.
It's because you have a major thing for Bobby Cannavale and his incredible talent. So do I, though.
Yeah.
Very much so. Who was nothing like you thought they would be?
That's such a good question. Grace Van Patten. When I first met Grace, I kind of just thought she was going to be, everyone just kept describing her as sporty. And I thought she was going to be like a really sporty, cool girl. And she's like the biggest fucking idiot I've ever met. She's one of my favorite people in the world and one of my best friends. Yeah, Grace Van Patten. Yeah.
That is such a good answer.
Yeah.
Number five, what was your biggest challenge?
I don't know if I can spoil it yet. I'll just say that first day coming on set and seeing so many cool, famous people and me having weird hair and feeling insecure about my hair and not knowing how to talk to people. That was my biggest challenge.
Now I want to know what you were going to say. Can't do that to me.
Later.
I really want to know. Number six, what is one word that describes your character, Glory?
For now, serene.
Glory's gonna lose it. Glory turns out to be a murderous psycho, everybody.
Good up.
Number seven, what is one word that describes working with Nicole Kidman?
Extraordinary.
I'm so jelly. I met her once on a red carpet and I literally didn't even get to speak to her. There was three of us asking one question, and she looked at us individually in the face, and I will never forget it. And I was like, Nicole Kidman looked at me, and I'm so glad.
Never washed my face.
Never washing anything. Number eight, if you could have played any other character on the show, who could it have been?
Oh, I don't know. That's such a good one. No, because I want to watch everyone play their characters. I don't want to do it. That's like, I'd say my favorite character. My favorite character is Napoleon.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think so.
Why is that?
I think he just breaks my heart. Something about a dad trying to be happy just actually ruins me. Like that speech at the end of episode 3, I've watched it a bunch of times and I just sob every time. But also Tony. But see, I don't want to do it because I want to watch them do it. So I don't want to play anyone. Yeah. I just want to watch them.
Okay. That's really humble and cute. Also, very true. Something about watching a vulnerable man is heartbreaking.
Ow. Ow. It hurts. Yeah. But also Regina, I love Carmel. And I love, I don't know, it's too hard. I can't.
Number 9, pitch the series to someone who hasn't watched it in 9 words.
Oh. Do my its and ands count?
No, you can do its and ands for free. Yeah.
Trippy. Funny. Dark. Beautiful. Relaxing. Stressful. Cool. Will be fun to watch if you're stoned. I ran a little bit over.
Loved the ending. Cheeky little stoner comment there. You are an absolute gem. I'm obsessed with you. Everybody watch 9 Perfect Strangers because you are, I'm obviously about to become psychotic on the show. So
I'm not even.
Zoe's like, I'm not spoiling anything. Honestly, you're an absolute treasure. This has just been so delightful. And congratulations. I'm so thrilled to have met you, honestly.
You too. It's been so nice.
It's been wonderful. All right, Del, we'll see you soon, hopefully.
All right, heaven. Look after yourself.
Mwah, you too. Bye. Bye.
Well, that was such a good chat. Be sure to check out Zoe on 9 Perfect Strangers, streaming now on Amazon Prime. On the next episode, I chat with Mark Billy Billingham from SAS Australia. We actually recorded this earlier in the year when Billy was in quarantine before filming began. We chatted about his life and you're not going to want to miss this storyteller's insane stories. And if you like this chat, you can rate, follow, and review, and follow me on Instagram at AnitaAnnabelle_ and at TheGoodChatPod. See you next week.